Hi guys, happy Friday. Thank you so much for listening. Welcome to Kidding Around, and you know I'm Dr. Candace. Today we are going to tackle some of the most common gynecological concerns and complaints from our teens and young adult females. I have a special guest, an awesome board certified obstetrician, gynecologist, my friend, Dr. Keisha Callens. She is a women's health and public health expert. She is the assistant medical director at the Albany Area Primary Health Care Center in rural Albany, Georgia. So she is committed to the women's health care and public health initiatives of her area. She and I are really good friends from medical school. We sat together, we ate together on that seafood diet, everything we saw we ate. And we have been friends ever since. We both were National Health Service scholars, so we are committed to serving underserved communities. And she has continued to do that in her area. So I am so grateful and thankful that we finally got everything worked out to do the talk today. And she's going to give our teens and young adults some wonderful information on how to navigate and get through these tough times when they first start to have gynecologic issues and concerns. So please help me welcome to Kidding Around, Dr. Keisha Callens. Good morning, Dr. Callens. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. Good morning, Dr. Candace.
Thank you so much for coming to Kid Around with me. And we're going to jump right in. And I want to ask you a question that I get asked all the time. At what age should girls first see the GYN or have a gynecologic specific examination?
Well, actually, it depends. In all honesty, we really start doing pap smears on girls when they're 21 if they are sexually active. However, if they're not sexually active, they may need to see the GYN for other issues, but not necessarily have to have an exam. Sometimes, though, I do have people coming in because they have, you know, concerns with discharge, and in those cases, I may have to do an exam. But that exam may still be adjusted according to the patient.
Okay. And so is there a specific, say they're healthy, there's no complaints, there's no problems, should there be a focused age or time where you just sit and talk and maybe do an external check to just teach them about those woman parts?
Yeah, I think any time after a young lady starts having her cycle is probably a good time to start having those conversations. It's also a good reason, like you said, doing an external exam. But a lot of times, just having a conversation, a lot of times girls have questions about their body, what's going on, things related to your cycle. It's also a good time to discuss things like hygiene. And so as soon as a young girl starts having a cycle, it's not unreasonable to have that kind of talk. Now, they can still have that talk with their pediatrician. But if they have additional questions or their pediatrician is not comfortable, then definitely seeking the help of an OBGYN is definitely helpful.
And it's up to the parent and the child to determine that comfortability. Of course, they may feel more comfortable. And then all, you know, docs are not created equal, as I always say. And so if you think you need to see a female doc and you may have a male pediatrician, or your doc is not, you know, exactly comfortable, then that would be a better route for you. And then in addition, you can also see adolescent specialists or family practitioners, or maybe there's a nurse practitioner that's more comfortable in the girl area.
Yes.
Absolutely. So now the next issue for teens is that, especially that first exam, they're very nervous, they're scared, they have a lot of misbeliefs and myths about what's gonna happen. They have a perception that there has to be pain involved or a full speculum exam. Can you just break that down for our teens and parents to set their mind at ease and walk them through an exam?
So basically, we know that an exam for any woman at any age is usually an uncomfortable thing. So we really do try to make sure they understand what's going to happen. A lot of times, I'll pull out the speculum, I'll show my girls what that looks like, open it up so they can hear what the sound is like, and then kind of walk them through that process. Usually we have our girls to undress from the waist down. They're covered up with a sheet, and then really try to walk them through each step of the process. Opening of the legs, and then using the speculum, making sure they take a deep breath before they put the speculum in. Because a lot of times, just the anxiety of having some of an exam can be very uncomfortable for the patient. Having someone there they're comfortable with is also helpful. So usually I ask them if they want to have mom or someone else in the room just to kind of be with them and hold their hand. It does kind of help with that comfort level. But I think the most important thing is just really we try them to be very gentle, and we try to really say or talk through every step that we're doing to make sure that our girls are comfortable.
Absolutely. And then also, I know some teens or parents may be cringing. You know, if your child is 12 or 13, they've been having their menstrual since 9, and there may be some complaints, say, about pain or something's going on, and they need to have a GYN exam. That child may not have to have a speculum exam. So it doesn't always mean you're going to have a pelvic exam, a pap smear. There just may need to be an examination of the abdomen on the outside, or just an external look of the vaginal area. So you can talk about that with, you know, the GYN or the doctor, because that may not be always the case. You may not need that.
And even sometimes, too, like if I do have a young lady who comes in and she's complaining of discharge and I'm concerned, I may just do a Q-tip exam as opposed to putting in a speculum. And that is a lot easier to tolerate in our younger patients. So definitely the conversation is going to help guide us as to the way that we can get the information that we need without causing too much distress to the patient.
Absolutely. And I know that you do everything to make them comfortable and set their mind at ease. Dr. Callens is like the most down-to-earth, approachable. I just can imagine your patients love you and feel comfortable, and I'm sure you do all kinds of things to kind of settle them down. You're like probably the teenage whisperer.
Well, actually, we do. I mean, sometimes I pull my phone out and I put it in Pandora. I ask my patients, what's your favorite artist? I will play music, and it's amazing how just using music will change the atmosphere of that exam room and help them feel comfortable. They start singing and they hopefully don't think about it too much, and I can do what I have to do real quickly. So we will do our best to help the patients be comfortable, and the parents too.
Absolutely. All right. So now we're going to get into our main topic for today. Can you tell us, and I know there's probably way more than we have time to discuss, but maybe your top three reasons why teenagers come to you or they're referred to you from me or another general practitioner?
The problem, like top three things would be irregular cycles. Number two would be painful cycles. And then number three would be vaginal discharge. Those are kind of the most common things that I see in my young girls.
Okay. So let's start with that first one. Let's talk about painful, because I know that's probably my most common complaint in the pediatric office is dysmenorrhea. So can we break that down for our teens as to what that means? Why is it happening? And some tips on how to make it better.
Dysmenorrhea or painful periods is actually one of the most common things that we see. Now, just to do a little bit of biology, the reason that it happens is because when you're getting ready to have your cycle, your uterus, which is one of the organs in the body, produces a hormone called prostaglandins that literally makes you cramp. And so the way that we manage that really is, number one thing we do is to offer you some kind of pain medicine. The important thing about the pain medicine, though, is you can't wait until after you start hurting to start taking it. I mean, a lot of people do that, but it won't be as effective as if you try to take it before. So what I do a lot of times, I recommend that my young girls actually get a period tracker on their phone.
Okay.
And that way they can start to really figure out when their cycles are coming. And if you can kind of narrow that down, you can start taking your pain meds a day before.
Okay.
And typically the pain meds we use are ibuprofen or naproxen. Everybody's different. Some people naproxen works better, some people ibuprofen works better. It just depends. But the key really is getting that medication in your system before your cycle starts to really kind of prevent or decrease how severe those cramps can be. Cramps can be really bad. I have young girls who are out of school for a day or two each month because of their cycle. So it's a big deal. And
right.
We don't want our girls to miss school because we need them to be smart so they can do well.
That's
so
right.
So really we have to get a handle on managing that.
Absolutely. And so the ibuprofen or naproxen is sort of like a prostaglandin blocker and an anti-inflammatory medicine as well, right?
Right, exactly. The second most common thing that we'll do usually is we'll do something or we'll have a conversation about what can we give you to help manage your cycle. And sometimes that involves using hormones. Now, I will say that I'm not really crazy about putting all my young girls on some kind of hormonal pill to do things, okay? But sometimes it's necessary if their cramps are that severe, they're throwing up, they're missing school, we have to treat that.
Right.
And so one of the most common things that we do, and this is a conversation you can have with your pediatrician or your OBGYN, but one of the most common things we'll do is actually just birth control pills.
Right.
And birth control pills are awesome for four reasons. They help your period to be predictable, so you know exactly when they're coming.
Mm-hmm.
They're usually shorter, they're lighter, and they're less painful.
That's a miracle.
They really do a good job of really getting things under control.
That sounds good to me, and I'm glad you broke it down that way, because a lot of parents hear birth control and they go, I don't want that, we have to do something else. But if that child can, you know, get it under control with that medication, their whole life, their function, their ability to go to school, hold down a job would be so much better. It just limits suffering, I think.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, I don't even keep them on the birth control, but sometimes I'll do it for 2 or 3 months, see how they do stop it. Sometimes they're better without it. So it does not mean that just because you start your birth control pills mean you have to stay on it. We do it based on what will improve the quality of life for our girls, what makes it easier for them to do what they have to do and not take a break or from school for 2 days out of each month.
Right, right. Because that just, you know, I often get people asking me for school notes, so they're excused those 2 days every month. And I just always say, no, that's just not the answer. We have to find another way. Because that's not how life is going to work. You can't be excused that often for unfortunately, for dysmenorrhea.
Exactly.
Any other natural therapies or any other pointers before we move to irregular cycles?
Well, the only thing other thing I would mention is really the importance of just diet. That's something I can't stress enough. The way that we eat, unfortunately, is not always the best. As with anything, I would encourage our moms to help our young girls to really do better with our diet, you know, limiting the sweet drinks that we take in, limiting our fast foods, eating more fruits and vegetables, and also the value of exercise. I mean, all those things really help your body to work better. And believe it or not, they have an impact on your cycle as well. So it should go definitely be recognized that those things are just as important to help. Now, there are other birth controls that we can use. Of course, that conversation will take a little bit longer, but definitely, if your daughter is having a problem, you need to have a conversation. There's no need for them to suffer every month. And so we can figure out what's going to work best for that particular young lady.
Absolutely. So let's talk about irregular cycles. And that can go on either way. You can have none, or you can have too few, or you can have too much bleeding, too long, or too many times in a month. So let's break that down.
Yeah, so irregular bleeding, and you did a great job of just outlining, it comes in many different shapes and forms and lengths of time.
Absolutely.
So the most concerning thing, believe it or not, about irregular cycles, meaning they don't come very often, is it makes our moms really concerned.
Yes.
If they don't see you having your cycle, they're wondering, well, what in the world is going on?
Yes.
So that's usually the biggest concern when my moms come in. But I usually try to reassure them. I usually try to have a conversation with a young lady, you know, finding out whether or not she's sexually active. If they are, then we're going to, of course, approach that conversation a little bit differently. But for someone who strictly just has irregular cycles, there are a couple of reasons why that may happen. Now, a lot of times, believe it or not, when your girls start menstruating, you know, you may not have a cycle every month. And that may not be a bad thing. Some people feel like if you're not having a cycle every month, then that means you're getting backed up, things are not coming out, and you're going to get sick. But that's not always the case.
Okay.
Our bodies have their own clock. And so I don't feel like we have to medicate or change everyone that has an irregular cycle. If I have a young girl, she's 13, she may just need some time to grow up and for her cycles to get regular.
Right.
So really, there's no real need to rush to put them on something to regulate if they're not having any symptoms. The biggest concern with our girls in that case is they have to be prepared because they may be at school and then the cycle may come and they may not know. So they got to have backup. They got to have a purse with some supplies. They got to have some stuff in the lockers. That way, if it does show up unexpectedly, they're prepared.
Have to be in tune.
Odds, unless the patient is having an issue, if they're really young, I'll give them time to let their body fall into line.
Right.
That's the first thing.
So I often get that, and that's exactly what I say. So I'm glad you supported that and confirmed that, because, you know, obviously primary amenorrhea is you haven't had, you know, a period at all. So that's natural, right? Amenorrhea. And then you're 10, 11, 12, you start your cycle and you may get one and then you may not see another one for 3 months and then you may get another one and then another month. And you, like you said, I get a lot of concerned parents, but I often tell them within that first year, sometimes 2 years, you're going to have that irregularity. And so I try to reassure. And then, like you said, with that being said, in a young child, you really have to educate them on being prepared, being in tune with their bodies so that they don't get that embarrassment of having an accident in front of all their friends at school. So that is so, I just wanted to reiterate that because that's a whole issue in and of itself. And then moving forward to secondary amenorrhea, you have been having your periods. They may or may not be regular, but what's a point of concern? Say you've been having your periods, you've been having a couple of years now, they've been fairly regular. What would be a period of time where you suddenly stop having your periods, where you would get into that secondary amenorrhea period that's a concern? Now, you said it. We have to check for pregnancy, automatic. I don't care if you say you're sexually active or not. You have to pee in the cup.
Absolutely, that's every time, first step.
Right. So now, when you say, okay, she's not pregnant, this is secondary amenorrhea. What is that period of time? I've heard 6 months. I've heard 3 months. So clear that up for us.
I'm usually using about 6 months.
Okay.
I usually give people time for it to kind of get on track.
Okay.
But I do want to throw something in there too that I see a lot. So when we have young girls who are very active in sports, sometimes that, but being very active in sports can affect the body, and sometimes that can also contribute to having secondary amenorrhea.
Okay.
So I had one girl that I saw, one patient, she was a runner. I mean, she was an amazing track all-star.
Right.
And so her periods just did their own thing. And I had to really work with her mom to understand that we were not going to treat that. We were just going to let her body do its thing. Because we understood why, you know, that was happening because of her exercise and her intensity of how she was, you know, practicing and running and all that stuff. So that's important to also know kind of what your young girl is doing.
Right, and the most important thing is that she kept following up with you. You were in touch with that situation. So at any point, you would be able to say, okay, now enough is enough or whatever.
Now, sometimes I find with secondary amenorrhea, I may just have to, sometimes I do the birth control pills like we talked about before because they're helpful for several reasons. And I may just do it for 2 or 3 months to get the body jump started, and then I just stop it and just see what they do. Because sometimes our body just needs like a reset button, and that works well.
Right.
Now, there are some cases too where I'm finding now in my young girls that are overweight, that actually has a significant impact on the cycle as well.
Yes.
And so that's something I have to count. I have, you know, 15-year-olds who are 250 pounds. So, of course, believe it or not, that excessive weight really has a very big impact on that cycle.
Absolutely.
So a lot of times, the way I treat them, I'm actually working on weight loss.
Yes.
I'm talking about exercise, I'm talking about diet. And a lot of times, as that weight starts to come down, their period actually starts to regulate.
Right. Yet another reason. I'm telling you guys, I know I say this all the time and you guys are probably tired of hearing it, but diet and exercise is so important for every part of your body, every system in your body. Just being obese and morbidly obese affects your menstrual cycles. It does. It affects your fertility. And it's something that may even get into what they call PCOS or polycystic ovarian syndrome or type of metabolic syndrome. And I don't want to go into that too deep, but just to throw that word out there, just from being obese. So I'm glad you mentioned that it can also get your hormones all out of whack and cause problems with menstrual and fertility, etc. Now, and then also there's our anorexic patients. Can you speak to that?
Yep. So these are patients who have a problem with kind of how they see their body. And as a result of that, it affects how they eat. And a lot of these young girls are actually just starving themselves. They don't eat at all. And so their body and their metabolism kind of goes into a completely different mode, and the cycle shut down because the body is trying to conserve as much as it can just to try to make it through. So just like how the some of our athletes have a different kind of stress, anorexics also have a different kind of stress on the body, and sometimes we see a lack of periods for that reason as well.
Right. So what would be the main sum up of amenorrhea for our teenagers and for our parents? It sounds like reassurance and getting in to figure out where you fall in that type and continue to follow up with your doctor, I guess. Yeah. Is that right? That
and
about
that
it?
Last one is, yes, absolutely right. And that last one is especially important because we may meet and talk and we'll say, okay, we'll wait and see what happens in 3 months and then we'll go from there. So it's an ongoing discussion, an ongoing relationship to really work out what's best for your child.
Absolutely.
And I think we probably need to do a separate show canvas on PCOS because I do see that a good amount in my younger girls too, but that's
right.
A whole conversation by itself. So we
absolutely.
Have to do that.
We will. I love it. We'll do it. We'll do it. So moving on, I think the third thing we mentioned was vaginal discharge. And so I imagine I get this all too often. Now, all vaginal discharge, before everybody goes there, is not a sexually transmitted disease, but a lot of them are. So I would just say that. But I often get a lot of vaginal discharge in the pediatric clinic. And it could be from a 7-year-old all the way up to, or even younger, 5-year-old, all the way up until, you know, my 21-year-olds. So help us break that down and what could be some of those causes, et cetera.
Well, first of all, when I start talking about discharge, I always really take some time to talk to my girls about hygiene because that's something that is
there you
not
go.
To go without being addressed. And so the first rule of thumb, even though it sounds crazy and I tried to laugh when I asked my patients, what direction are you wiping when you pee?
That's
are
it.
You wiping from front to back? You would be amazed how many people I have come across who are not doing that. They're going the opposite direction. And the reason you're doing that is because you're trying to not bring germs from the back to the front. So
right.
Really, first off, just to put out there, you got to wipe in the right direction. That's
yes.
Number one.
Two,
what kind of soaps are you using to bathe with? So a lot of people like to smell real good and smell real sweet. And so Bath and Body Works ends up in places where it does not need to be for the whole time. Bath and Body Works belongs on the body. It does not belong in your private area.
Right.
The only thing that I really like for them people to use is water, Dove, or Ivory.
Okay.
Keep it simple, keep it plain. White soap, not fragrant, not scented, then that works well.
Why is that?
A lot of times these fragrant soaps really tend to irritate the skin.
Okay.
Number one, and then just throw off the natural bacteria that lives in that area.
Okay.
So the vagina naturally has some bacteria, but using those products really throws things off, and then you end up with bigger issues than you intended.
Okay, we got it, guys.
And the last thing is, using products, sometimes people go for like Vagisil or feminine washes or douches or
yes.
All these fancy things. God did not make the vagina for all that stuff.
Okay.
Leave your private alone. Soap and water.
That's too much.
Don't mess with your private.
Yes.
So hygiene is always the first thing, and usually a lot of times we can kind of address it that way. The other thing, like you mentioned, vaginal discharge can be just because kind of the body has gotten thrown off with its natural bacteria. You end up with like a wide discharge and after you have an odor. That's one category. And then there are actually infections that present sometimes with a vaginal discharge. So when you come in, we're going to be evaluating that. Usually either we're going to do a Q-tip exam or a speculum exam. We'll get a little bit of that discharge, and we'll look at it under the microscope. We can see if you have yeast, we can see if you have bacterial vaginosis, or critters.
Okay.
Is other thing that we look for a lot.
Yes.
On the fly, or just white blood cells.
Okay.
So a lot of times we'll do an evaluation to kind of guide our treatment in terms of what we'll do.
Got it. And you know, another thing that I have to throw in, because I've had a couple of cases like this, I'm sure we all have, a smallish child, maybe 5 to 8, who's exploring and they've put something in their vagina, a foreign body, or a preteen who just started using tampons and really don't know how to use it and left the cap in there. So that can be a pretty stinky discharge that's just due to a foreign body sitting in the vagina collecting drainage, natural drainage. So often, you know, someone has to look and find that.
Absolutely. I've actually had 2 cases where I've had to take young ladies to the operating room just so I could get stuff out. One young lady had a soap crayon.
Wow.
In the wrong place.
Yes.
And the other young lady had a Barbie doll bubble bath bottle.
Oh, wow.
But I will tell you, in one of the cases, what was happening was, and I tell my moms, when you if you use tampons and you're putting them in, put your baby out of the room.
Okay.
Because they were mimicking what mom was doing.
Wow.
And so I know you have your babies and you want them to be close, but when you're doing certain things, if they're not of age and they don't understand, don't let them see you put a tampon in.
Okay.
Sometimes in one case, that was the behavior that the child was mimicking.
Yep, we're the models. We are the models. They see and mimic everything we do.
Right, exactly.
Right. So hygiene, foreign body, not necessarily bad hygiene. You may have great hygiene, but all the stuff you're putting down there is what's throwing the flora off. and then we get into the sexually transmitted diseases. So that would oftentimes when a teenager comes to you and they have that discharge and you look at it and you go, oh, this is not normal discharge. First, tell us about normal discharge. When you're going into puberty, your body changes. There is a natural body discharge.
Yes. So depending on what part of the cycle you're in, sometimes you can have kind of like a clear, stringy, kind of mucousy looking discharge, and that may happen depending on where you are in your cycle. So that can be natural.
Okay.
But when it becomes abnormal, it usually, and I hate to use food to describe things, but when I try to get people to help me understand what's going on, I tell them, does it look like sour cream? Is it kind of white and runny? Number one, or does it look like cottage cheese?
Right.
Cottage cheese discharge usually is going to be more like yeast.
Okay.
And then the other sour cream type is going to be more like bacterial vaginosis. So I do kind of have them help me describe what's going on, and when I look at it, I can usually tell. When it starts to look green and it starts to smell funky, then we're crossing over into the infection side, okay?
And
that's usually something we're going to have to treat. I will tell you, though, you know, a lot of times my girls come in and they say, well, I'm not sexually active, so I still will check their urine, because you can check the urine for gonorrhea and chlamydia.
Yes.
And so I still always verify, even though they may tell me one thing, and I mean, I catch people all the time, they're not telling me the whole truth.
Yes.
But you really have to be honest with your doctor, because...
Yes.
The girls that I asked, if they told me they were not sexually active, and I believed them, and I did not check them, they could go undiagnosed with something that could be harmful to them.
Absolutely.
So you really got to be honest with your doctor. And I'll put my moms out sometimes, no offense to my moms, but if that's what it takes for the girls to be honest with me, then I need that, because I can't help them if I don't know what's going on.
There you go. I'm sorry. I tell them all the time, I hear you, but... I don't want to miss anything and cause you more harm. I don't believe anything you guys tell me. And they just laugh and I go pee in the cup.
Now, I call it the trust and verify.
Yeah, there. I like that. And then even for well child visits, all of our preteens, you know, I ask and I have the discussion privately without the parents, but I still say, go get your urine and I'm going to check it. And oh my God, so many times, several days a week, a teenager that has told me they're not sexually active comes back with a positive chlamydia or gonorrhea. So can you imagine that follow-up visit? So yeah, I have learned that we just have to look out for them as much as we can. So obviously if the young lady is having discharge, then that would, like you said, move us forward into a full pelvic exam. But like you said, girls, we can use a Q-tip. So it may not have to be so invasive as you think with the full speculum. Now, if you're having abdominal pain, if they put a finger in and you have tenderness inside the vaginal area, then I would imagine, Dr. Callens, that you would need to do a full examination.
Yes, definitely. But again, it would be a conversation that you have based on what's going on, and then really try to put it all together. But just know that our goal is not to harm you when we do an exam. Our goal is to get as much information as we can to make sure we're doing the right thing, to make sure that you get better. That
absolutely.
Is the honest truth.
Absolutely. That was awesome. Any other thoughts about our top three gynecologic concerns or complaints?
Well, the only thing I would say is that I find a lot of people who, when they do get to me about an issue, it's been a while before they got to me. And so I really would love to encourage our moms to really talk to their daughters about what's going on with them, and to bring them in if they have a concern. I would much rather they come in and talk to me and I can reassure and address the issue than have someone tell me, well, I've been having this problem for 6 months, but I didn't know what to do or I didn't do anything.
Right.
Especially with cycle issues, too. A lot of people just think that's supposed to happen. They think they're supposed to hurt, or they think they're supposed to bleed really heavy. But in all honesty, I really do think that, you know, God never intended for us to suffer. He healed a woman with the issue of blood. And so I figure
Amen.
That's a GYN miracle as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
So really, talk to your doctor, talk to your child about what's going on, and let us help you. I mean, don't be afraid to do that. If something doesn't work the first time, we'll keep trying until we get it right, because everybody's different.
Exactly. I love it. That was good. And took us to church, too. And I would say that obviously there's other concerns that I see that I refer to you and that I also handle in my office, things like, you know, matters of contraception. We hit a little bit on STDs, pregnancy, you're getting out of my office and going straight to the OBGYN, and then maybe some breast complaints. But obviously we don't have enough time for that today. We just wanted to prep you, educate you on the most common things so that it's not all French and new to you when it starts to happen, so that you know, oh, that's what Dr. Callens and Dr. Candace talk about. Let me, you know, tell mom, or let's get into the doctor. And now I have a pathway as to how this is supposed to go. And just that little bit of knowledge helps you to make the right changes and do the right things and not suffer as much. You know, get it taken care of early is better. Early is better. Now, one last question I wanted to ask you. Now, I get this all the time, some for scary reasons and some just for, I guess, parents are just inquisitive. I don't know why they're doing it, but I'll go in a room and it's a private complaint and they don't want to tell the staff. And I go, so, you know, what's going on? How are you? What brings you in today? And it's, I want her to be checked to see if she's a virgin. And I go, really? You know, is that why you came in? Now, I've never asked you this, and I don't know your opinion. My answer is, there is really no 100% way for me to examine your daughter to see if she has had intercourse or see if she's had sex. Because if it's not really a traumatic thing, so traumatic, a traumatic rape or a sexual encounter would create maybe abrasions, lacerations, something that looks, you know, swollen, things of that nature. But if that's not the case, I don't know. I don't know where that comes from. I feel like it's a myth, and I don't think that we're able to 100% say yes or no. And why would I do that anyway? Talk to your child. Is there such thing as a virgin check?
Do not perform those.
Right.
And I agree with what you said. And I actually think that, in all honesty, and I hope I don't offend anyone when I say this, I think when moms do that, they're really trying to intimidate their daughters.
Mm-hmm.
To, you know, that
scare them.
It sets up the exam in a bad way.
Yes.
Because they're already traumatized by thinking they're going to be examined with speculum and all that stuff. And so I really think we're using that in the wrong way. If you are honestly concerned about that, then we can talk to your daughter.
Right.
But an exam may or may not yield anything. And if I tell you no, that doesn't mean she's not doing anything.
Right.
She wants different kinds of sex. So we're looking at only vaginal.
Oh, yes. But there you go.
What a lot of young people are doing, they are actually engaging in oral intercourse or anal intercourse, or sometimes they're just doing a lot of fondling.
I'm glad you said that.
That actually can be troubling, just, and that's a whole nother show that we can do, Candace.
Yes.
Clearly, I'm seeing a lot of herpes in
right.
young girls. They're getting it because they're not always having penetrative intercourse, but they're bonding each other.
Right.
And they're still getting stuff that way. So just because her exam may or may not be benign doesn't mean she's not at risk for getting something.
Right. So you
the
got
education
it.
Education is still more important.
Right. So you got it, guys. Our teens, our young adults, even our adults, you can still get things from contact. That's how it spreads. So oral, anal, okay. vaginal, heavy petting, all of that. You still can pass on, especially these permanent, long-term, viral, sexually transmitted diseases. Absolutely.
And that's the thing I think a lot of people don't realize, is you can still get stuff. So really, my rule of thumb is, of course, abstinence is preferred.
Yes.
But you got to really know what you're doing. And a lot of people don't know, and you cannot judge what people have by looking at them. That is the biggest mistake ever. And then you get something that you can't get rid of, and that's sometimes very disappointing.
Yes, absolutely. So that oh, I'm so glad we brought that up. And stop asking for virgin checks. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's not the way to go.
You know, I'm very nice about it and I explain it, but I'm thinking in my head, get out of here. You know, talk to your child, have a relationship, stop trying to scare them. I really can't help you with that. There may be some people that are doing that, but I just don't, it's not my thing. So I really, really, really thank you for talking to us today and educating us. That was all great information. Hopefully it was helpful for you guys, our listeners. Dr. Callens, my very good friend, I will see you soon for our 10th medical school reunion. So I can't wait to see everybody. Yeah, Morehouse School of Medicine in Atlanta, Georgia. And so I'll see you in what, 2 weekends maybe?
That's right.
Yeah, awesome. So
thank you very much for inviting me to speak on the show. I have a feeling we will be talking again.
She'll be back, guys. She'll be back. So have a great day. Both of us have to run off to clinic now. And thank you guys for listening. Continue to support. Continue to follow. And check out Kidding Around with Dr. Candace every first and third Friday on SoundCloud.com. A lot more fun stuff to come. Thanks. Have a great day. Have a great day, Dr. Callens. And we'll talk soon, guys.